the problem of 21st century in year 2022 and beyond is that we certainly are dealing with another totally different set of problems, which is we have too many things and too much information. So it's about complexity.
Okay.
So what that drives us is that the way I look at it is the problem that we have today is complexity, not we don't have enough things.
Okay.
So if we keep on with the same mindset of, okay, we have a problem, let's solve this problem quick with another product.
Yeah.
We're actually contributing to that complexity without understanding why are we solving this or are we solving the right problem.
Okay.
So that comes back to, in a large organization, if we are just looking at design thinking as methods, then we keep on producing things.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Viscosity Podcast, brought to you by VLM Training and Coaching Specialists across the UK and Australia, hosted by founder Vicky Main. Are you a business owner, leader or executive? Have you ever felt stuck or disappointed about where your life or business is heading? Do you ever feel overwhelmed, compare yourself to others or feel like you're swimming in treacle at times? Our guests on the show will share practical tips and real-life experience about how they got out of negative situations or circumstances to live their best life on their terms. We'll be sharing real-life stories from real people doing incredible things. Stay tuned. This podcast is here to help you become unstuck from viscosity to achieving escape velocity and expanding your knowledge. Welcome to the Viscosity Podcast. I'm your host, Vicky Main, and today we have Dr. Chris Q in the studio.
Chris is a designer and we're going to hear more from Chris very soon. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Vicky. Good to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you too. And I know we met 6 years ago when we were both teaching in different capacities. And you've had a really interesting career, spanning a couple of continents and doing really cool things. Can you share with our learners, and actually, when we were teaching together, you were one of the cool teachers who I used to sort of resonate with, and, you know, we'd always come up with these ideas of doing things collaboratively, and tell us about your career history and your journey and what you're up to now.
Very interesting definitions here. Yes, I'm originally from Malaysia.
Yep.
I started my design education in the 90s, and it was interesting time because I wasn't planning to get into design at all, because that time everyone from my high school gang, everyone's gone into engineering and business and everything. So I was like, oh, okay, yeah, and I just need to get into business. But my parents, my mom said, you really like your art. Why don't you do something with that? And I was the one who hesitated. Really? Is there a career in this? But they were the one who actually pushed me into designs, in which I went into, and which was interesting because back then in the 90s, design is all about selling things. So it's all about marketing, branding. And it was really good going through the design education back then, because I was the first batch who went from analog to digital. We didn't get into computer until year three.
Really?
And it was in our first and second year of very manual training, like live drawings full on four semesters, black and white film photography full on four semesters. And I'll come back to that. That's actually a very important thing to do with design ability later. After my advanced diploma in Malaysia, then I said, I need more. So I talked to my parents and said, yep, go for it. And then this way I came over to Australia in year 2000.
To Perth?
To Perth.
Yeah.
Yes, to Perth in year 2000. And I was alone. But that was scary. But that was eye-opening as well, because suddenly I needed to stay on my own and five different housemates from all different countries and stuff like that. And that changed every semester. And that was fun. And then that's where I start learn different things. And then I went on, and a bachelor wasn't enough. I went on to do an honours, one more year on top. And that wasn't, I thought, okay, no more studying, need to earn some dollar. So yeah. I went back to Malaysia to work 1 year. And I realised that there's a lot more that I can contribute from a design perspective to not just the economy, but to the community as well.
Yeah.
But then realized there's a very strange culture back then that, you know, once you become a local, your voice kind of got lost.
Right.
So that's where it is. Okay, I need more exposure.
Yeah.
So I talked to Dad and they said, go for it. I came back to Australia again to do my PhD.
Nice.
So it is circulating around education, but that education journey kind of opened me up to a lot of different perspective about what design is.
Yeah.
All right. Started off with design as marketing and sales.
Right.
And then in my PhD years, that's where I went out to conferences and all.
Yeah.
And then realized in a big conference of 100 to 200 people, it's like 80% of people are not talking about design in terms of making pretty things.
Right.
People are talking about design for social needs, design for organization, redesigning, right. You know, big things, redesign policy and stuff. And that was in the mid-2000. And I thought, okay, I came back here and look at my own design practice and interest in, you know, making pretty things and pretty logos. And so they should be so much more than just me using, you know, design software, creating pretty pictures. And then that's where I went my PhD research into understanding the way people interact with wayfinding maps, which is tourist maps. And then big part of it turned out to be, you know, design, you know, needs to be for with the people, not just coming from design,
yeah,
coming up with something that we like. So that's where I shifted the whole of my design practice and belief in design into really it's that ability. It's not just the technical skills. Technical skill we can train.
Sure.
Very quickly, all right? But that design way of looking at the world, it's something that needs time to cultivate. So after my PhD, I did teach for a little bit in the university. At the same time, I was just exploring as well in Australia and Southeast Asia and what design could be.
Right.
Came across a group of very enthusiastic designers as well. And then we talk about the same thing. Say, yeah, design could be in this, design could be in that.
Right.
And then that's where we started to push for service design in Perth. And then it just went very big now. So that's where I work in the industry as a consultant, in and out with myself and in collaboration with others for about 3 years.
Yeah.
And then went back into academic, and then just until now I'm just floating between the two.
Yeah.
And, you know, the research feed into the practice, and then what I observe from practice feed back into research and so forth. So it is a long journey, but it is a very exciting one. But, you know, through that journey is really realizing that mindset is the key thing.
Right. That's where we have a commonality there in terms of, I know during those 3 years when you were consulting, you actually worked on some really significant projects, mm-hmm. and now they've come to fruition and there's some really cool stuff happening. I don't know if you want to share anything today, but you were the brains behind a few really cool things happening and supporting in that space. And I think as well, your PhD, having gone through that journey, I mean, I've always aspired to do that, but it's never quite happened yet. No. What advice would you give for people who are wanting to go down that route and take an academic career and do their PhD?
To me, it's a personal journey.
Yeah.
My advice is, because it is hectic, it is full on.
Yeah.
Full on in terms of it actually just rewired your mind. It just changed the way you think about things. Do it as a personal thing. Don't do it because your career asks you to do it.
Yeah.
It is, at some point, it's a journey for self-improvement, the way I look at it. If you're really hungry to know more about yourself, yes, do a PhD for that. So my advice is really do something that you really like.
Yes.
It's definitely going to be in your discipline, but it is a very rewarding 3 years full time.
Yeah, so you did it in 3 years?
I did it full-time. In 3 years full time, because back then I was paying international fees. So the fees stopped.
But you're still paying for it now.
I paid back my dad.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I paid back my dad. He was very kind to say, okay, I've got, he retired then. He said, use my retirement money.
Wow.
Yeah, that
very
was
very kind of him.
Yeah, so I paid him back few years after. But yeah, it is a very rewarding journey to know about yourself. that reflection, a lot of time in, I think half of the time in my PhD journey is about reflection.
Nice.
It's going inward.
Yeah.
And that that experience until now, that way of working,
yeah,
I still hang on to it. That's why until now I see there's two worlds, internal world, and then that's the external world.
Yeah.
Doing a PhD is basically knowing more about your internal world and linking that back
right
out into the external
world. I've never heard
world.
Anyone, I've spent a lot of time with academics in my career, and I've never heard anyone express it like that. And that's really interesting that you say that. Now, let's look at design thinking versus
yes.
designability, because
yes.
there's lots of people talking in the world about design thinking and, mm-hmm. you know, doing lots of great things in that space. But let's demystify this. I know we've talked about designability offline.
Yes.
Can you share with listeners a bit more about what designability is and how, tell us a bit more. You're the expert, obviously, so I'm going to shut up there.
yeah, I won't claim as an expert, but again, that's my own experience.
Yes.
As I mentioned, that two worlds, it comes back to that two worlds, that internal world and that external world. Some of the listeners might have realized the whole booming of design thinking in the past 20-odd years, starting with the Stanford D School and IDEO and British Design Council, with all the design thinking processes and methods and all out there, in which is exciting. And I'm quite grateful that these organizations actually did that, because they actually bring design into a next level from just in the 90s making pretty things. It is great that design has been promoted in terms of it's a method that non-designers can use, right? To me, that is important, but that is not all. But it's that external world and internal world. So using the methods, to me, it's an external world thing, because it's like a tool.
Yeah.
Right? Design is like a tool that anyone can use, nothing wrong. But the missing piece here is that internal world of your mindset when using this tool.
Yeah.
So that to me is designability.
Okay. So if we have a listener who has a large team, for example,
yeah.
who is
yes.
working in a certain sector, how could they apply designability methodologies into what they do? And how would that translate into the practical application in their business? Have you got any scenarios you could share in that space?
Yes. Again, the way I look at it is design methods are tools that you use when you have specific problems to solve.
Okay.
All right? Process 1, 2, 3, 4, or some 5. And you've got a lot of things, a lot of methods to go through, like observation, ethnographic research and that sort of things, and then ideation, reframing problem and stuff like that. Those tools are all good, right? That is good when you have, for a large organization, when you have problems at hand, yeah? And there's a challenge in that is that people try to make it shorter and shorter. So you have lean methods, this and lean that, which
yeah.
at some point there's nothing wrong if the problem is clear, right?
Okay.
So the challenge of 21st century that I see is different from the problem in the 1980s to 1990s. If I could just go talk about this a little bit more and come back to designability.
Sure, sure.
The way I look at it, 80s and 90s, the problem that we're facing was that there's not enough things. We all need to produce more things.
Okay.
Right? So the problem is for design and business to generate more products and sell.
Yeah.
Which was great, because it stabilizes the economy and everything. But if you look at after the 90s, especially beginning of the 2000s, where digital age started to come on, what we have here is a complex social, economic, and environmental issue. So things start to get on more, because we keep on going down the same trajectory of producing things. So when it comes to digital age, we're still in the momentum of creating things, creating more information, more data, and stuff like that. So the problem of 21st century in year 2022 and beyond is that we certainly are dealing with another totally different set of problems, which is we have too many things and too much information. So it's about complexity.
Okay.
So what that drives us is that the way I look at it is the problem that we have today is complexity, not we don't have enough things.
Okay.
So if we keep on with the same mindset of, okay, we have a problem, let's solve this problem quick with another product.
Yeah.
We're actually contributing to that complexity without understanding why are we solving this or are we solving the right problem.
Okay.
So that comes back to, in a large organization, if we are just looking at design thinking as methods, then we keep on producing things.
Yeah. Right. Adding to the complexity.
Add on to the complexity. Yeah. So that comes back to design as an ability and as a behavior. So comes back to why I mentioned in the beginning that I had four semesters of life drawings, four semesters of black and white, film photography and so forth. That actually helped me to see the world differently.
Okay.
If anyone who's been through life drawings, you know that it's never about how you draw. Life drawings is all about how you see the world.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yes, because you have exercises like, you know, do not look at your paper, contour drawing, look at the outline of the things that you're looking at and draw from there. And then I've heard there are exercises like, you know, they the lecturer will put a model in level three. You run up to level three and run all the way down to ground floor and start drawing.
Right.
So it's actually training you how to see the world.
Right.
How to see things. So that actually molded what I looked at as a design behavior. So if you talk to a designer will never clock off to being a designer.
Okay.
They won't say, okay, it's 5 o'clock, now I stop being a designer.
Yes.
If you have designer's friends go out to have a meal, they will start analyze things. They'll start to analyze the business. They'll start analyze the brand and everything and watch a movie. After the movie, they'll talk about the implications of the movie and stuff like
that. Yeah, yeah.
So that always, it becomes a habit.
Yes.
You cannot. So the way I look at it, if for a large organization to really benefit from design, you need to drive that design culture. And that design culture comes from design being an internal thing, yeah, not to just use tools.
Yeah. Do you think design ability should be taught from a young age? Or
yes.
do you think it's or some elements are being taught already in schools? Or do you think this is something that should be embedded throughout the curriculum?
Yes, 100%, 200%, I would say. It is happening in some European countries that without them realizing it. I mean, yes, we do talk about creativity, doing arts and stuff like that. That is fine. That is cool. But, you know, to really embed that as a way of looking at the world is very different, because it's not just about problem solving. It's not just about being creative. Now, creativity, there's like the word cool, there's a lot of definition to it. The way I look at creativity is it's not just about how artistic you are, which is another definition.
Yeah.
Being creative, a lot of times, the value of being creative is how creative, how differently are you be able to unpack or, you know, really understand a problem.
Okay.
Can you see the problem from another perspective? A lot of time in education, we say, okay, creativity is about how well you come up with different ideas and how quickly. That's only less than half of what creativity is. A lot of time, creativity is about how creatively you look at a problem. Because that is the key to complexity, with understanding complexity without adding more complexity to it. Because if we keep on coming back emphasizing creativity is about coming up with solutions, then it again comes up with the issue of pumping up more things to make things more complicated without us actually understanding what really is the problem.
So I guess you have do a lot of work with government agencies, mm-hmm, and because with a lot of social aspects, mm-hmm, and a lot of not for profits, or
yes,
do you work in that space quite a lot?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, because those are the areas really we're dealing with highly, highly generational complex situations. Mm-hmm. Not to isolate any issues, but for example, homelessness is not something that is just happened the past 10 years. It's generational. It's been brewing for years. And it's just gotten worse and it's just surfaced. But really to go into that, you cannot pinpoint where homelessness comes from.
Okay.
So that's very, very complex. Okay. So you need a lot of time to really understand we cannot solve it as a problem, but we can change direction of it and observe, understand it and change the direction again.
Yeah.
So it's the same as healthcare. There's a lot currently going on that, healthcare is not just about medicine.
Yeah.
It's about people understanding and taking control and taking ownership of your own health. And that itself is actually generational. It's actually family-based. It's actually cultural-based. So it is quite complex. So again, it's not just about, we want to communicate the information about diabetes. Let's do another app.
Yeah.
And high blood pressure, hypertension. Let's do another app.
Yeah.
It's not as simple as that.
Yeah.
A lot of time, this, why people are not taking care of themselves, it's cultural, it's family upbringing, so it's not something that an app can solve.
Right.
So
I wonder if there's been any designability workshops within the health and wellness space. That would be quite interesting. Maybe we should do something in that space.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the past 3 years, because of COVID and then the health industry, from the way I observed, they do realize the importance of really understanding problem and really doing a bottom-up approach which currently there is a lot of that going on, which is good. There's a lot of more grounded approaches to health, well-being and so forth,
yeah.
and mental health as well.
So you must be brewing with ideas. It must be coming out. And I know you say a designer never switches off, but how do you escape all these ideas coming at you and have, what do you do to get time off, Chris? What does that look like for you?
Well, I know maybe that's the part that we haven't talked about. I do like my fishing.
All
and
right.
I
yeah.
do like my music too.
Nice.
I play guitar.
Yeah.
Have my own favorite guitarists and stuff like that. I collect a couple of guitars at home. The past 4 years, I got into fitness a little bit more because, just aging process. I'm 44 this year.
Yeah.
So things start to pop up. It's okay, I need to get into fitness and stuff like that. So that these few things start to obviously with the little one at home turning 8, little man. Those are the things that is outside of work.
Yeah. And I know you've shared with me in the past that you actually practice gratitude on a daily basis. And it's definitely, I know we talked about this before the show, but share a little bit about that and about your journaling as well and how you've used that to, I guess, improve your life and what you're doing.
Yes.
And your mindset.
Yes. I think that comes back to, again, being a designer. Because anyone who's been through design education, design journal, reflective journal is a big part of all of your education, all the units.
Yeah.
Almost all of the units we need to do journal. And that's actually the most valuable thing. So after formal education, I kept on that habit of keeping a journal. And big part of it is about self-reflection.
Sure.
A reflective practice, not just on work, but as for me as a person. And I find it's really, really useful if we do it, a couple of times a day, even if it's just 5 minutes before work.
Mm-hmm.
Wake up a little bit early, do a bit of exercise, and then sit down, just spend time with yourself as the sun comes up. Perhaps just 5-10 minutes to just write down, what are you grateful about during that time, that 5 minutes that you have for yourself? It can be something really, really simple that I still be able to breathe. I have a notebook in front of me. I can afford a pen. The sun outside it's rising. It's a good day. And it's something as simple as that. And I would like, most of the time, I like to follow that with a quick journaling about How do I want to show up today?
Nice.
What kind being of
being mindful, yes, and having that intent to,
yes,
to ask that question. I really like that because it sets your intention for the day as well.
Yes.
And
yes.
And you'll be pleased. I've got my journal here, so I've been journaling this morning,
great,
which is good. But again, being, you know, former teacher, I did that. That's part of the reflective practice. You do learn the art of reflection, and that does, and you can reflect, and that's really important too. But it's really great that you share those things, because I know you've been in that, you've been doing that for years, and practicing gratitude. And I know that people who are constantly looking at the past, it can cause depression.
Yes.
And people who are looking constantly at the future, it can cause anxiety.
Absolutely.
So being in the present moment is actually such a skill.
Yeah.
I believe. And I know I used to find it difficult to sit and meditate. And do you meditate? Is that,
yes,
something you do? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
it's quite hard to quiet your mind though when you're doing all these things and you're in the moment, but then having to sit down and meditate, it's like actually I could go and do other things. And yeah, it took me a while to get used to that and doing that, but I mean, I couldn't sit and meditate for an hour, but I love sound healing. I think that's my meditation, like when it relates to music,
yes,
because I love music.
Yes.
And being able to do that, I found a way that I can meditate. But I guess for you, like meditative practice could be playing your guitar.
Yes.
And switching off from the outside world and doing something in that space.
Absolutely. That active meditation, it's very useful. You know, you don't have to sit down for 3 hours to, you know, think about the middle of the flower. If you could do that, that's great. But, you know, when I started my jobs and everything, you know, after my PhD and my first job and everything, I didn't have time to do that. What I would do was to go for 10 minutes walking meditation during lunchtime.
Yeah.
Walk, but just look at just immediate, that front area that you're walking without judging other people, without looking at other people, no eye contact. You just walk for 10 minutes. You get the steps up at the same time. But it's just, you just be mindful and be aware of things like, you know, the breeze in your hair and stuff like that, just little things, and the steps and everything.
Yeah.
And I just recently got into wearing barefoot shoes.
Really?
Yeah, really, really thin soles.
Yeah.
And it just gets you to be more mindful
really
of what you're stepping on. You know, and you can feel every single thing that you walk, you know, crossing the road, and you know, when you step on a little pebble, you can actually feel that.
Right.
It's I'm not advertising for them, but
it's almost like a metaphor for life.
It
so
is.
That the impact on a small thing can create such pain for someone. So the fact, the way that you show up.
Yes.
And you think about consciously about how you're going to show up for that day.
Yes.
Can have a huge impact on the people around you. So I actually love that, the way, and you know, like I said earlier, you're one of the cool people who I work with. And no wonder, because you're practicing, you know, daily gratitude, and you're thinking about how you show up for others, and genuinely being kind. And I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, certainly in business, I think there's a lot of people out there who are extremely supportive, extremely collaborative, but it's a bit like there's hawks and doves. And that's really interesting. I seem to gravitate towards more the doves. And the hawks can just stay out there. But I really like what you, it's interesting you say that. And to kill people with kindness, shall we say. You know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
For sure. So in terms of your mindset, is there anything, Chris, that you're fearful of? Or is there anything that has stopped you from really going out there and achieving your life purpose, your dreams?
Definitely there are fears, and I've tried to still overcome them. Mm-hmm. I do see myself sometimes as quite an anxious person. I do.
Okay.
I do worry as well. And that's why, you know, the whole...
Join the club.
Yes. Yes, isn't it? Especially when you have a little one.
Well, do you know what? I think it's synonymous with high achievers and intelligent people, maybe. That's what I'm telling
myself. It's always that thought in your head that what could happen if suddenly I become this, or suddenly I don't have that, what could happen? And it's not, again, when you have a young family, then it's not just about you, it's about the whole family as well.
But the danger is catastrophizing things further. So you can go into this worry pool, but then it can get worse and worse and spiral.
And then you don't get anything done.
And which is why I said earlier about getting to the future and having this anxiety, which is where daily practices of meditation and grounding exercises can keep you in the present moment and enjoy it.
Yes.
It's like I make a conscious effort, like at the moment we're on the podcast and I'm thinking about being in the moment.
Yeah.
I'm stopping myself from thinking about the six other things I've got to do today and then tomorrow and whatever else is going on. But it's about being present in that moment and having fun with it along the way.
Yes.
You know, because life would be boring, wouldn't it?
Yes. Yes. A fear, definitely, and a fear of failure, fear of letting other people down, including my family back home, my colleagues, the clients that I work with, even though every time, when I run a project at the end, everyone was so grateful. Oh, it's so good that you have done this.
Sure.
But during the process, it's like, well, I screwed it up. Will I make it worse for them? They're already an established organization. What if they took this on and they did it differently? I mean, turn out the other way rather than helping them. But, but that always come back to that. That journaling, that awareness, being mindful, just come back to it. How do I want to show up to this project this time?
Yeah, that's really cool. So I'm curious, you mentioned you very much, you help others and you're doing all these great projects. And with your high need to achieve, do you find that sometimes you struggle to say no to activities
and
boundaries? And I'm just wondering... How, because I know being in academia myself previously, I got the burnout t-shirt and actually did collapse in the classroom when I was just overworked and but it was, I didn't see it coming. And it was the best gift that I could have been given to be able to set me up for entrepreneurship, because I know that health and wellness is so important and being able to take a step back and celebrate the wins. So for you, how do you say no, and what have you put boundaries in place? Or maybe there's still some work to do, Chris. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. I think personally, it's life and things get more and more complex. I think it is very important for us to say no.
Yeah.
Sometimes saying no to things is actually good for the people asking for it, because if you take another thing on, at the end of the day, you spread yourself too thin. And then the people that you try to help, you're not helping them 100%.
Exactly.
They're expecting you to help them in that way, but at the end of the day, you can't do that because you took on too much.
Yeah.
Definitely my purpose being a designer, and after my PhD, was to use design to help people. But the past few years, I realized if I keep on taking on things without drawing the boundary, it's not good for myself. It's not good for the people I try to help as well.
Sure.
The analogy that I always remind myself when I have time to reflect on all this kind of things, that, if you don't know how to swim and someone drop into the water and asking you for help, you don't jump into the water. It will end up to be two people that need help.
It's an interesting point, sure. Sure. Yeah.
If your hands are already full, when I say hands, it's just analogy. It could be your mind's already full. You can't take on another thing emotionally.
Exactly. That's interesting. And so can you share, with all of your experience in academia and designability and working in business as well and doing freelance work, can you share some top tips for people who maybe are feeling a bit stuck at the moment in their life or in business and want to get out of a negative situation and live life on their terms? Can you give some top tips of how you would suggest that, what they could do?
Yes, being at peace and trust. And trust
in the process?
Yes, trust yourself mainly, I think.
Yeah.
Not saying that from a woo-woo perspective.
No, not at all.
I think, it's very easy to very quickly spiral into a lot of different things, a lot of situations when you are not doing well. I mean, myself have been through that before as well. Different situations. But the thing is, trust in yourself that you can handle this.
Yeah.
And being exactly. at peace with that.
Yeah.
That you can handle. You're in this for a reason.
Sure.
And things like people getting redundancy or the project didn't go as well and stuff like that in terms of work and then other personal stuff. Trust that you can get through it.
Yeah.
And being at peace with your own ability of dealing with it. Do not compare yourself with others.
Yeah.
You know, get inspiration from others, fine.
Sure.
But don't compare, oh, that person's done so well, they've been in this situation. Why can't I? So as soon as you say, why can't I?
Yeah.
You actually telling yourself that you're going to go that direction.
Yeah. And like, it's like comparison is the thief of joy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why would you compare yourself to others? You've got to just run your own race.
Yes. Really. Yes. You can get inspiration from others.
Sure.
You know, they have been into this situation. Now that I can learn from that. You know, what are they doing? Rather than saying, oh, you know, there's so, but I'm still here, I'm stuck. You know, I've done everything they've done, I'm still stuck. Why can't, as soon as you say, why can't I do that? You're actually going down that direction that you say you can't.
Yeah, it's a really good point, actually, really good point. Chris, it's been a pleasure chatting to you today.
Thank you.
I know designability is such a diverse topic, mm-hmm. and yeah, really excited to see what you do next. And I know we've worked together in the past and looking forward to some collaborative stuff in the future as well. So that's exciting. And yeah, hope you have a wonderful summer in Australia. And yeah, and I'm sure you'll be back in the classroom very soon with your students, and take care.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Chris. Take care.